Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Republic Education Call for the United States of America and our Republican form of self-governance for November 19th, 2024 at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. I'm Phyllis Marie, and I'll start this call with a devotion. Let me get my book open here. This comes from Psalms 27, verse 13 and 14. In Exodus chapter 15, verse 13. Leave outcomes up to me. Follow me wherever I lead, without worrying about how it will all turn out. Think of your life as an adventure, with me as your guide and companion. Live in the now, concentrating on staying in step with me. When our path leads to a cliff, be willing to climb it with my help. When we come to a resting place, take time to be refreshed in my presence. Enjoy the rhythm of life. Live close to me. You already know the ultimate destination of your journey, your entrance into heaven. So keep your focus on the path just before you, leaving outcomes up to me. We the Republic are peaceful, lawful, and private. And our Declaration says, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And with that, Daryl, it's your turn.
Well, I think we've got Marilyn wanted to say something. Marilyn, you there?
Okay. She's here.
Yes, I'm here. Well, this is a paid announcement coming straight out of cold Minnesota. Guests, have you ever heard it said that your health is the most important thing in life? Well, if you don't have health, you can't have much of a life. The Thursday Republic calls are getting us ready for the weather of cold winter and the sugar holidays. Remember to join us on Thursdays and be introduced to the latest help and tips for all seasons. Keep an open ear for the next ad before you leave the call. I yield.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Marilyn. There's a number of documents down here underneath, and one of them is basically a bunch of other groups that we are trying to, work together with other groups to restore our guaranteed Republican form of self-governance. And so there's a number of calls here that I'm showing on the screen. There's an attachment down below, but we're trying to put together a coalition between all the states, and let's work together to restore this country back to the guaranteed Republican form of government that was intended to be, that is for, by, and of the people. So if you want to join any of those other calls during different parts of the week, or the national status, they've got plenty of information, and where they're talking about repatriating the freedom seekers and to get it where, we're recognized as, people, one of the people that are actually the founders of that helped form this government, and to try to keep the supreme law in place that would protect each of our rights. which has been trampled upon in a major way. So with that, we're not going to go ahead and read the rules, since you've been very good. Everybody's been very good with being courteous to one another. But if you're muted, or if you're during the presentation, keep your phone muted with the star 6. And after Ed opens up for questions, you can press star 6 and then ask for the floor by giving your first name and state. And then you'll get the floor, and then you go ahead and ask your question, and try to limit your time to like 1 or 2 minutes with the question, so others will have an opportunity to ask their question. So tonight we've got Ed George back. He has done a lot of research and been willing to share this information. And tonight we're going to be talking about the oath of office is basically a permanent allegiance to that entity called the state, or the state of, which the state of is really a corporation. And it basically personates the state, which when you look on any map or atlas, you'll never see state of. You only see state. And that identifies a landmass with boundaries, and which is kind of sovereign in and of itself. But the state of is basically a federal corporation, which is really out of the District of, it's a sub-corporation out of the District of Columbia, the federal United States corporation. And he's also going to be talking about the status of an American national. So, Ed, if you want to take the floor, it's all yours.
Well, thank you for that introductory there, Darrell, and thank you for the opportunity to speak on the Republic Call. My name is Edmund George. I am your guest speaker tonight. We're going to go into the introductory of the state citizen. And when I say state citizen, it's spelled with a capital S, small t, small a, small t, small e. All they did is style it with a capital S in the beginning. When you're talking about a republic state, the de jure sovereign states, they're in all lowercase letters. But yeah, we're going to talk about the trap of being a state citizen of that corporation. When one declares by oath or affirmation to be a citizen of a state, I'm talking about the corporation, they are declaring their permanent allegiance to that entity called state. You can find this in 8 United States Code at 1101 Part 21, where it talks about state, example, state national. Why do I say state national? A lot of people are out there promoting that state national to the corporation. That only puts you right back in to be a U.S. citizen when they do that. The term state citizen means a person owing permanent allegiance to a state. That's found in 8 United States Code 1101 Part 21. So why would you want to declare your allegiance to a corporation state? Doesn't make sense to me, but some people are doing that. Allegiance means obligation or fiduciary and of obedience to the government in consideration for protection that government gives. That comes out of United States versus Cohn, K-U-H-N. That's the District Court of New York, 49 Supplement 407 at page 414. See, oath of allegiance, inquired allegiance, is that binding a naturalized citizen. Well, what do they talk about in the 14th Amendment? A naturalized citizen to the United States. So if you declare your allegiance to that corporate state, you just declared your allegiance to that United States corporation, which is the parent corporation. So the source is 8 United States Code 1101A36. It talks about the term state, and this is what it includes. And whenever you have the word includes, it's limiting to what is stated within the text. includes the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, the Virgin Islands of the United States, and the Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Islands. And state means a state, territory, possession, or commonwealth of the United States. 5, United States Code, 5517C. So you can clearly see by these statutes that they're talking about a corporate state. So if you want to take an allegiance to that, you're just declaring yourself to be a U.S. citizen again. So let's talk a little bit about an American national. American national is neither one. Is either one of them, excuse me, a naturally born on the land and soil of the American states. Now, when they're talking about American states here, it's all lowercase letters. That is your republic de jure union states, such as Wisconsin as an example they use here. Or 2, after being naturalized as a United States citizen, is a foreign-born. Now, they use the word person, but I put man and woman in place of that, who voluntarily accepts and publishes their adoption of a specific American state as their permanent home and domicile. They don't say resident. They don't say citizen. They say domicile. That's your home. And they're talking about the Republic states. A American national is not acting as a citizen of any government and owes no obligation to government beyond keeping the peace and reporting crimes. To avoid the citizen or citizen, the first one is a capitalized C, the second one is a lowercase c, citizen, deception trap, one must correct their status as an American national who is natives of the states, all lowercase, as required in 8 CFR 101.3. Now, I want to clarify that statute. That statute specifically talks about diplomatic immunity, and it talks about natives of the states, of the American states. They have a form of diplomatic immunity. So 8 CFR 101.3 is specifically talking about diplomatic immunity. Now moving on to 2016 Government Printing Office Style Manual at page 95, Statute 523, talks about nationalities, etc. And it says, in designating the natives of the states, again, all lowercase states, the following forms will be used, the nationalities, etc. Now, this has a list of all 50 of the states, the Republic states. I'm not going to name all of them, but I'm just going to name a few. If you were in New Jersey, you'd be a New Jerseyan. If you were in New Mexico, you'd be a New Mexican. If you were in New York, you'd be a New Yorker, which is your nationality, your public nationality. I'm not talking about your personal nationality. So the 2016 Government Printing Office Style Manual at page 95, nationalities, etc., specifically talks about all 50 of the states' nationality, like New Jerseyan, New Mexican, New Yorker, etc. There is a list of all 50. This is Dynamics in Chapter 17, Useful Tables, Shows, Forms. And then it lists all 50 of your states as your nationality. Let's use North Carolina. If you were in North Carolina, you'd be a North Carolinian. If you were in Georgia, you'd be a Georgian, etc. That's just a few of them. Every state has their own specific nationality, and I'm talking about the de jure republic states, not the corporate state. So let's look at 8 U.S.C. 1101A23. The term naturalization means the conferring of nationality of a state upon a person after birth. after any, by any means whatsoever. Excuse me. Let me repeat that again. 8 United States Code 1101A23. The term naturalization means the conferring of nationality of a state, all lowercase state, upon a person after birth by any means whatsoever. And 8 CFR 101.3, creation of record of lawful permanent. Now, they do use the word resident in here. I don't agree with that word, but states or status for a person born under diplomatic status in the United States. Example, one who has claimed their minor estate. Now, I have a specific process that does that, but we're not going to get into that tonight. All right, so it goes on. The court held, and this is the case, W.W. Corngrill Company versus State of Minnesota. The case citation is 180 U.S. 452. It says, the acceptance of a license in whatever form will not impose upon the licensee an obligation to respect or comply with any of the provisions of the statute or with the regulations prescribed that are repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. W.W. Corngrill Company versus State of Minnesota, 180 U.S. 452. So until you correct the matter by correcting your status, nothing will change. I have a successful solution. If you would like more information on that, contact me, Edmund George, directly at edgeorge44@protonmail.com or leadingedge8@gmail.com and request information on correcting your status. Now, I have done this process back in 2017. I have had no issues myself whatsoever with any of these so-called departments of government. So moving on. The government admits that often the word person is used in such a sense as not to include the sovereign. We were all born sovereigns. Somehow we lost that by either signing it away or misunderstanding government forms, and you give your jurisdiction to them and your authority to them. All right. Since in the common use of the term person does not include the sovereign, statutes employing the phrase are ordinarily construed to exclude it. In 8:15 U.S.C. 7, Congress attempts to make clear that the term person is to include a corporation. You can look up a lot of statutes. You'll find that they're all corporations, the term person. The provisions is that the word person or persons, whomever used in this act, section 1, 2, 3, or 15 of this chapter, shall be deemed to include corporations and associations existing under or authorized by the laws of either the United States, the laws of any of the territories, the laws of any state, that's the corporation state with a capital S, or the laws of any foreign country. See United States versus Cooper Corporation, 312 U.S. 600. Levy versus McCartney, 6 Part 102. United States versus Freeman, 3 Howe, 556. Ohio versus Heavenly, 292 U.S. 360. The quote I just said above that comes out of these court cases. That's where it comes from. I invite you to participate in my free coaching weekly Saturday night calls at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. The call-in number is 845-385-9503. The access code is 401-7367. You can go to rumble.com, look for my account, edgeorge44. Or you can see my website, edgeorge44.com. Or to learn more on how to correct your birthright status as a sovereign man or woman, American national, having a nationality of domiciled state, diplomatic immunity, contact me at leadingedge8@gmail.com. So we can open this up for questions. This is pretty much a short little speech I'm doing here tonight. I could go into more detail on anything anybody wants me to. So just press star 6 to unmute yourself, and we'll start off with questions.
Ed, I got a question. This is Daryl.
Sure, Daryl.
You know, up there on this here last part where you go, the government, it's in quotes, the government admits that the word person is used in a sense as not to include the sovereign. Where was that quote from? Was that from one of the cases down below?
Yes. Yes,
okay,
it was.
The same as the next statement where it says, since the common usage of the term person does not include the sovereign, statutes employing the phrase are ordinarily construed to exclude it.
Yes, that's correct.
That's from them. That's in the cases there from United States versus Cooper Corporation?
Yeah, well, all of them. The whole list of them there. There's also another one in there that they didn't put on here. That's, what is that? Chisholm versus Georgia.
What was that, Kenneth?
No, Chisholm versus Georgia.
Oh, Chisholm versus Georgia, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a U.S. Supreme Court, where the guy named Chisholm said he was a sovereign man, and the state turned around, the state of Georgia turned around and said, no, we're the sovereign. But the Supreme Court ruled that they were not the sovereign, they were a corporation, and the guy Chisholm was actually the sovereign.
Okay. Okay, has anybody got any other questions?
Daryl, this is Kent. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Kent.
Yep. Ed, I would like you to elaborate for the benefit of some of the people on the call. We might have some new people. I'd like you to elaborate a little more, as you said you would, on the oath of office and the difference between the corporate oath and the de jure oath, because I think a lot of people don't understand that. And then you might also speak briefly on the position that Dave in Kansas takes regarding the fact that even though they've taken a corporate oath, they still have an obligation to the people. So if you could expound on that, I think it would be helpful to some of the people on the call. I yield.
Sure. Sure. To identify a corporate state oath, it will say, let me just use New York as an example. It would say the state of New York, the county of, say, Chenango, or the county of Delaware. Whenever you see the style county of, say, Delaware or the county of Chenango, state of New York, or even if it's a state of New Jersey, county of Hudson, etc., that is a de facto private for profit corporation. And they declare that they're taking an oath to that corporation when they take their oaths of office. Now, if you had a true republic de jure oath of office, it would simply say they're taking the oath to the Constitution, and it would say, for example, if it was New York, it would say New York State in all lowercase letters. And then it would just list, like, if it was Chenango County, it would say Chenango, then the word county in lowercase letters. That would be a proper de jure republic oath. But you don't see them. I've seen hundreds of oaths of offices. I have not seen one yet that's been styled that way. Now, to elaborate a little bit, you were born a sovereign when you were born. However, that got taken away from you when mom made application for the birth certificate. You didn't know it because you were just a little baby at that point, but you didn't know it. Neither did your mother. but she became the informant for the state, the corporation state. And you'll always see, there's some rare cases where you won't see it, but most of them, you'll see the name styled in all capital letters on the birth certificate. There's rare cases where you see them in upper or lower, but generally they put a middle initial, like say a P or something in the middle as an initial of a name. That's not even a true name. That's still a de facto fictitious name. So you want me to go further on this, Ken?
Yeah, Ed, what I'd like you to say is Dave takes the position, and he's been successful from what I understand with what he's done in Kansas and the surrounding area, and even with other people across the country. I don't know if he's on the call tonight. Maybe he could speak for himself. But he does not take the position that just because they took a corporate oath that they have no oath or that you can't hold them for that oath. So we wouldn't want to leave people with the impression just because they took a corporate oath to a business entity that, and not to a de jure entity, that we can't hold them to that oath. So if you can elaborate on that a little bit, I think it would be helpful.
Sure, absolutely. Yes, you can hold them to that corporate, even if they took an oath of office to that corporation, you can expose that and demand that they operate their court as a common law court according to the Constitution. The Constitution is a limitation on their powers. If you look at the preamble of the Constitution, it says, we the people. That's us. We give them authority. Whatever authority that may be, we give them that. So when they act outside that authority, yeah, you can absolutely hold them to that. However, you have to know what you're doing. If you're brand new at this and you try to go in there, these judges are going to trick you. So you do have to know what you're doing so you can stand your ground. But yes, it is possible, even though they've taken that oath to the de facto corporation, you can absolutely hold them to that as if they took an oath of office to the de jure republic states.
How do I step in if I want to ask a question? I'm a new person on the call, and it's directly related to what you just said.
Just ask for the floor, or just say, may I? And then just give your first
may
name
I?
And state. Yes. What's your first name and
may
state?
May I? Rebecca, New York.
Okay, go ahead, Rebecca.
My understanding, and I may not be getting the terminology, but conceptually, is that even though they're sworn, as I understand you're describing it, to the corporation entity, that they're still held up by the Constitution. My question then is therefore, and you're saying it's a bit tricky to hold them to that because, you know, as I understand, federal law presides over all the states. And that it's often aligned with constitutional rights. And I'm wondering if when dealing with these kinds of entities, if we are able to put that forth and require it to be upheld. Because, yeah, I'm just wondering if that's the case. You know, require by what those federal regulations are, or I may not be understanding the system, so I'm glad I'm asking it.
If I may.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I'd like to clarify a lot of things. First off, if you use my process correctly, it's been used in the state of Texas, the state of Florida, the state of North Carolina, the state of New York, Michigan, Missouri, and Kansas, and one of three things happen if you do it right. Either the plaintiff wins the case, the judge recuses himself, or they dismiss the case. Now, if you study this little six-page thing that I put in for you all 2 years ago now almost, 5 U.S.C. 3331 and 3333 outlines the federal statutes that and who has to have an oath of office and what it says. if you get their oath of office, you put across it, I, a man called John Henry Doe, standing in God's kingdom without the United States, all caps, accept for honor, value, fact, and consideration your sworn oath of office. Now you and I have a private binding contract that you will honor, protect, and defend all of my God-given and constitutionally declared rights. And if it's to a judge, I decided recently I'll put on there as fiduciary. Now, they all got an oath of office they signed, and it's witnessed. You need to understand contracts. They made an offer right there, and you just accepted their offer. I don't care what contract, what constitution or what they did. They said they were going to follow the laws of the Constitution and the state wherever they are. If they're going to say that I misunderstood it, they're going to have to explain, oh, I don't work for the real government. I work for the de facto government. Now, do you think any judge is going to say I'm working for de facto government, I'm not real? It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. Not if you use it right. You have to know who you are. And to clarify, Chisholm versus Georgia says sovereignty resides with the people. In 1980, in Brady versus United States, the Supreme Court says, you can never knowingly or unknowingly relinquish your sovereignty. You were born a sovereign, you're going to stay a sovereign. In 1982, Judge Rehnquist in the Jicarilla Apache versus Marone case said the idea that sovereignty could ever be relinquished places the whole idea of sovereignty on its head. I don't go in, but many people out there go in and try to use the old thing, if you can't baffle them with brilliance, you buffalo them with bullshit. And filling out all the paperwork you want, you really don't have to do that if you accept their oath of office and are willing to stand your ground. They don't have a leg to stand on. You have all the power in the world. You can move, you know, if you're a sovereign, how can they ever get jurisdiction? There's three types of jurisdiction. Territorial, hey, they're de facto, you're de jure. They can't get it there. Subject matter jurisdiction, their statutes, rules, codes, and regulations do not apply to sovereigns, just as Ed said. Persona, no. A corporation can never contract with a real person. We forget the power we have, and we don't use the power that they gave us in their statutes, rules, codes, and regulations. All those things apply to them, not to you. You are the sovereign. They work for you. You're the master. But we go in there groveling and asking for their forgiveness for us violating their statutes, rules, and codes that have nothing to do with us. Now, Jack and Margie Flynn was on this call a few months ago. They have a administrative process that's really good, but I think can't ask the question about, well, Dave Robinson gets their oath of office. And Jack and Margie Flynn said, well, we don't do that. We don't think it's necessary. Well, I don't care whether they think it's necessary or not. That's the way they do things. But if you accept their oath of office, you have a private binding contract. And the power of Jackie and Margie Flynn's process is based on the 14th Amendment, sections 3 and 4, that says if you violate your oath of office or the Constitution, you lose your job, you lose your pension, and you're subject to treason. Now, if we all know that and we all go in and approach these people from that way, they're going to back down. They like their job. They certainly don't want to lose their pension. Not any judge out there. And I don't think it makes the difference between the corporate constitution or the de jure constitution, because in my studies, the only thing I've found different in the constitutions is one has four and the other one has of. They still promise to do the same thing. The amount or the obligations of the federal government, whether it's de facto or de jure, they got 17 or 18 different areas they're supposed to operate in. All the amendments apply, and every section in there applies to both the de facto and the de jure. I yield, and I'll answer any questions people have.
Okay. Does that help? from New York?
Oh, I might add that I have some students in New York that did the oath of office package, and they're the ones that got Judge or Mayor Adams indicted using the oath of office package. I yield.
Okay. Does that help New York?
May I?
Yeah.
That was Rebecca. That was Rebecca that asked the question.
Okay. Rebecca, did that answer your question? Rebecca? Okay. She must be muted. Okay. Who is that? Yeah. Who is this?
This is Blue. Napa
okay,
State.
Okay, California. Okay, go ahead, Blue.
Hospital, California.
Okay.
The first thing, I was wondering if tonight there'd be time that Daryl could act like the defendant and Dave could act like the judge, or Daryl could act like the judge and Dave could act like the defendant, and run through that. And then, two, I'd like to know, Dave, if you would mail me those six pages here to the Napa State Hospital. And then three, if after you and Daryl run through this little skit, one of you acting like the judge, the other one acting like the defendant, if we could get Ed to do the same thing with Daryl, judge and defendant, and give us a little take on what that sounds like coming from experienced people.
If I may,
go ahead.
Phyllis has got the six pages. She'll send them out to anybody that wants it, I think, won't you, Phyllis?
Yeah, I can get it from her. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. The other thing, I don't do anything with the judges. All these things that I'm telling you about, I give the judge the oath of office. It's up to him. If he wants to bring me into his court, I have two choices. I can either make a criminal complaint against him, or I can do a tort claim against him, or both. When they say that oath of office, in my federal case, I got the oath of office of every judge I thought that was going to handle it, which happened to be three different judges. All three of them recused themselves. In my county here, I got their oath of office in 2018 in the election back then, and everyone that I got the oath of office of and presented to them didn't run for re-election. You know, I have a couple of documents that are not available to everyone out there, but I didn't use those most of the time. Just here in the county. If there's no dialogue. If you're going to do a dialogue with a judge, when they bring you into court, say, will the defendant please stand? Well, I'm not really a defendant, but I'll stand up there, and the judge will say, do you understand the charges against you? And I'm going to say, no. Is this a criminal or a civil matter? And he's going to have to make a decision. And I hope that if you're this far along in studying, that you know the difference between a civil and a criminal complaint and what it takes to prosecute them. If you don't, then you need to go back and study. If he goes ahead and says it and doesn't do what I tell him to do, then I'll say, Judge, I move for a fair, honest, true, and just trial in accordance with due process. Now, is he going to say, motion denied? Automatically, you got to appeal whatever happens. You don't have to say another word ever. These are the type of things that I would use if I ever have to go back to court.
When you're finished, Dave, when you're finished, Dave, I'd like to add something.
Okay, when the prosecution gets up to talk, objection, Your Honor. What? The prosecution's testifying to facts that have not yet been entered into evidence. I move for dismissal for failure to state a claim upon which – relief can be granted. That's the one the lawyers always use against us when it looks like we're going to win the case. So they can get the hell out of there without us getting in their back pocket. You know, you have to know who you are. If you know who you are and you act who you are, not going there trembling and shaking. Now, that doesn't mean when I went to court, I wasn't trembling and shaking. But the good Lord gave me the words to say when I was there, and I said all the right words. Didn't get me out of prison, but I said all the right words up to a point. One more time, if I'd said the magic phrase, I do not consent, I wouldn't have spent 75 months in prison. I said it four times, and the judge didn't know what to do. They modified the transcript didn't put in one time when the judge gave me 60 months. I said, I do not consent. 60 more months, I do not consent. 60 more months, I do not consent. 60 more. Judge, you can't do that. Well, what can I do? They're afraid of you as you are of them. They have as much or more to lose. You know, those judges have millions of dollars built up in their retirement account. They're not going to jeopardize losing that. And if you ever heard of Tim Turner, he used to put on a lot of seminars and fancied himself to be president of the de jure United States at one time. But he made a profound statement that I always remember. He says, you have to remember, in politics, the big fish always eat the little fish. If you got the big guy frightened, he's going to sacrifice all those little guys down there so he stays where he is. You can see that in the election that we just had. The big fish always eat the little fish. I yield.
Yeah, very good information there, Dave. My only concern for people that are brand new or just getting their feet wet is they're most likely going to make mistakes somehow. But the process that I teach, Dave, and I've accomplished this back in 2017, I've listed with diplomatic immunity in the State Department, which is the blue list. So if I ever get pulled over, which is about 2 years ago, I simply showed my passport ID card. They ran back and run the name, and they come back, and they apologize, and they let you go. So there's no case even gets started. That's my whole point. That's my process as I teach. We don't even need to have a case get started in court. It gets nipped in the butt before that even happens. But, yeah, I think your process is very good. It's very well written. And it will definitely work if somebody knows what they're doing. Yeah. That's what I wanted to add. So I teach people how to stay out of it before a court case even gets started. Once you get listed in that national database on the blue list as do not detain, do not arrest, no jurisdiction, those cops will leave you alone. That's all I wanted to add.
Okay. Lou,
you're right. If I may, Daryl, again,
yeah.
If I was a newbie just starting, this is what I would do first. I would get a list of all the maxims of law. There are maxims of law out there that you can use that they can't rebut. A simple one is you can't contract against yourself. What's an unconscionable contract? Your mother signed an unconscionable contract when she gave you away. You need to study contracts because corporation has to do, it's under commerce and it's based on contracts. That's the reason I asked the judge, is this a civil or a criminal matter? If it's a civil matter, they have to have a contract with my signature on it. If it's a criminal matter, they have to have an injured party and have him state his claim. You have to know the four elements of a crime. First one, there has to be an injured party. The injured party has to state their claim and produce a remedy, and it's up to you as the plaintiff or your party to prove that it was intentional. An intent is one that they slide over all the time. You know, the people they put in prison for J6, you know, how many of them had the intent to cause insurrection? But we make the mistake of hiring a damn attorney who's he makes a fourth of whatever the judge fines you under the fee schedule of the court system. He and the judge get to split a fourth of it, so he doesn't care whether you, well, he does care because he gets paid by you and the court when he sends you away. And when I was in prison, I had a roommate. He hired the best lawyer in the county to get him out of a drug situation. Paid him $90,000. He still ended up getting 5 years in jail. They're nothing but, to borrow a phrase from one of my old friends, used to do court cases and win, he always referred to the attorneys as pettifogging shysters groveling for filthy lucre. You need to look up all those big words and understand that's exactly what our legal system based on attorneys and the bar are. Pettifogging shysters groveling for filthy lucre. And that's where I would, if I was starting all over again, that's where I would start, would be reading the maxims of law and understanding what it takes to commit a crime, whether it's civil or criminal. And then what do the maxims of law say about all the things that are there, and what about the witnesses against you? And of course, you need to understand the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Phyllis reads that part every week here. Governments are instituted among men, and they derive their just power from the consent of the governed. That's the reason the Lord gave me those words when I was in court. The judge couldn't do anything because you nullified everything he did. If I don't consent, they can't do anything. When we show up in court, we're actually consenting to their jurisdiction. When we reply to all their paperwork that they send us, their warrants and summons and all that, we're entering into their jurisdiction. We're accepting their offer to contract. That's my thinking, and I think I'm right. I've last two times I've been invited to court, I didn't go, didn't do anything other than give one judge my packet of the oath of office. Nothing happened then. The next one, I didn't do anything at all, and nothing's happened from it. Supposedly, in both cases, they got a default judgment against me. Now, the other thing that I would recommend that you do is do a little bit of studying with the UCC. Do a UCC-1 financing statement against your straw man, with him the debtor and you the creditor. It's recorded in their law. They don't have anything in the birth certificate. It's all presumed and assumed that your mother gave you away. If you file that UCC-1 financing statement, there's your evidence in all 50 states and probably around the world that you have a legitimate lien on your straw man. And if they're going to punish him or you, they're going to have to pay off the lien that you put on, but you have to make sure that you do it in accordance with law. And you can use that as a process with your friends. You put a lien on them, and they put a lien on you, the real person. And if they try to mess with you, they have to pay off the lien. If you make the lien high enough, they aren't going to mess with you, I don't think. I've never tried that. I've done that, but I've never had to use it before. But I think it would work. They can't argue with the UCC. I yield.
Okay. Yeah, if there's anybody that's new on the call that isn't aware, I would like to read a couple definitions out of Black's Law 5th. The word personate, remember, attorneys can only represent an infant, a deceased veteran, or an incompetent person. They can't represent an entity, you know, without consent. So personate means, it says, it's to assume the person, character of another, without his consent or knowledge, in order to deceive others, and in such feigned character, to fraudulently do some act to gain some advantage, to the harm or prejudice of the person counterfeited, to pass oneself off as another having a certain identity. See, and this is what they're doing, and that's why they put your name in all capital letters up there in that caption. Those are captured parties. And it's the legal fiction, usually the state of, or the all capital letters, corporate United States or United States of America, against that legal fiction, that birth certificated entity. And then the word represent is defined. It says to appear in the character of, semicolon. So that means and, personate, semicolon, to exhibit, semicolon, to expose before the eyes, period. To represent a thing is to produce it publicly, period. To represent a person is to stand in his place, semicolon. To speak or act with authority on behalf of such person, semicolon. To supply his place, semicolon. To act as a substitute or agent. Now, this is where they set us up when you don't know your rights and, you know, who you are, that you are the master. They are our servant. And they're trying to hold you and put you in the place of the trusteeship, and they're like a stand-in, but they operate 100% on presumption. And it is your duty to break that presumption when they pull you in and charge you, just like a driver license. They pull you over on the road, and, well, they ask for your driver license. Well, are you in commerce? If you're not in commerce, you have a right to travel. As long as you're not interfering with anybody else or injured somebody else, you have a right to freely ingress and regress from state to state without being interfered with. But they hold you. You are not able to purchase or to even get a driver license as a living man or woman, as a living soul. They will only issue it to the civilly dead entity, and that name is always spelled the same as what's on a tombstone. They are in all capital letters because they are recognized as civilly dead. It is not a living soul. It is a dead entity that has no rights when you're not alive. It's just a transmitting utility that is used in the commercial part of the world. So with that, I'll yield. Is there anybody else got a question? If you're muted, you got to press star 6.
Yeah, before we get questions, I want to add something. Dave's right about that. I do want to caution people on the uniform commercial codes. Be very careful when you're doing that process. I've done it years ago, and I made a couple mistakes, and I don't want people to get caught up in that. You have to absolutely correct your status publicly. You've got to let the world know that you're a sovereign man or woman. If you don't do that, you will be classified as a United States citizen. If you're classified as a United States citizen and you're doing the uniform commercial codes against the all capital entity name, they will hang you. I've got personal experience with that, so word of caution, be very careful if you're going to go that route. It will work if your status is corrected. That's all I wanted to add, so we can open up for questions again.
Okay, and if there's anybody that does not have their status corrected and would like to learn more, you can go to nationalstatus.info or nationalstatus.com. And they have a site that really fills in a lot of questions that you may have if you're not familiar with the process or what needs to all be accomplished. But to do a simple affidavit, there's a sample on there. And that has to be sent to the Federal Secretary of State. And then you could carbon the Federal Attorney General. And then you can also, once you get that back, you can also, get that over to your State Secretary of State and Attorney General to basically confirm it so they're aware of this correction that has been made. I yield. Is there anybody with a question? Press star 6 to unmute.
Yeah, Daryl, this is Kent.
Yeah, okay, go ahead, Kent.
Yeah, in addition to the nationalstatus.info and nationalstatus.com, the website set up by Dave and Kay Springs, we should also refer people to Ed's process, wherein he not only does that affidavit, but has other documents available. So I think that should be stated also, not just sending them to one website. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, and Ed's got a thumb drive that you can get that has a lot of templates and things that you may be able to need for many different processes. So his contact is down at the bottom at leadingedge8@gmail.com. Just send him an email and he'll respond to you to try to meet those needs. So
I want to add one more thing, Daryl, if I can. When you get my process, you have access to me personally, a one-on-one coaching. I walk everybody through this process. I do videos every week, like the free coaching calls that I do each Saturday. They're archived on Grumble.com at EdGeorge44 account. So it's not just some documents. It's backing it up with every bit of law. There's over 40 years of research compiled into this package. So you do get access to me one-on-one. I walk you through the whole process so it's complete. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's very helpful. You know, if you're new and you just got little questions, you know, it might be, you might think it's a little question, but it may have a big impact if you don't do some of these things properly. So, is there anybody else with a question? Press star 6 if you're muted.
May I?
Yes.
Hello? Who's
speaking?
Is Rod in Oregon. Rod
okay,
in Oregon.
Go ahead, Rod.
Yeah. Hey, you know, here in Oregon, you know, every state obviously has its own constitution, basically, but here in Oregon, in our constitution, I'm sure they're pretty, most of them are all similar, but it says here, Article 1, Section 1, and you probably know about this, but, you know, we declare that all men, you know, when they form a social compact, are equal in right. And without going through the whole thing, at the very end, it basically says that, you know, the government was established by the people's authority for our safe, peace, and happiness. And then at the very end of the article here, it also says, and we also have the right a right to alter, reform, or abolish the government in such a manner as we may think proper. So I was thinking about that. So I'm thinking, how many people would it take to do something like that? I mean, would it take everybody? Is there a set limit? Do you know if they have any kind of such process that if somebody would have that, I mean, could I walk in there and say, hey, man, I want to abolish and get rid of this government because I don't like it, and you know, or whatever. But is there like, would there be a set amount of people that would take to do that? Or I don't know, maybe I'm not making any sense, but I'm just wondering about that. Or who would you get a hold of in their so-called de facto government to validate something like that? I yield.
You want me to do it, Daryl?
Go ahead, Ed.
Okay. Well, that's going back to the basic foundation where we have to get our grand juries up and running. That's why we need to unite across the country. Once you get your grand juries up and running, that is a checks and balances on the so-called government. So, yes, we need to work together on this and unite, even though we may have differences of opinions and stuff. We just got to set those personal things on side and start working together. So it's absolutely, we got to start at the county level across the whole country. I hope that addresses his concern there.
That brings the authority back to the people. when the people exercise their authority as a sovereign, because it's the people that created government. And the created can never be greater than the creator. So that's the maxim. As God created the people, people created government. So they are created or formed, they're actually formed as our servant. So that answer your question, Rod? Yes, okay. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah. If you're sovereign, they can make all the rules they want to, but when we're sovereign and apply to God's rules and the law of the land, well, basically only four things the way I picture it out. That is, harm no one, destroy no property, do not trespass, and keep the peace. Now, as long as we abide by those, we're sovereigns, we don't have to abide by their statutes, rules, codes, and regulations. You can say, that's fine. I don't want to do it. I opt out of it. As far as these are all my opinions. You can agree with me or not. I don't care. Taxation. One of the maxims of law is the contract or the trust is the law. We have a contract with our, or some of us do anyway, with our Creator, that we would abide by His laws. And as long as we do that, the other laws don't make any difference. As far as taxation goes, they have taxation in the Bible. You know, that's one of the reasons that Jesus was born in Bethlehem, because of taxes. But in that was in a wholly, in an entirely different set of rules and regulations. That was under Roman civil law. Here in America, we're not under Roman civil. Well, we are, but we as sovereigns aren't under that Roman civil law. To get us to involved in their tax program, we have to do it voluntarily and with our consent. We have to do a contract with them. If we want police protection, we probably have to sign a contract to pay for it. That's the way I look at it. If we change the government, if we want fire protection, we have to do that. We already pay taxes to maintain the roads and the bridges when we buy gasoline to run our cars. We pay sales tax, you know, we don't have to pay, but that goes to do a lot of other things. You know, we survived 150 years about without any income tax, and income tax doesn't apply to individuals, sovereigns anyway. You know, that's written right in the tax code if you want to take your time to read it. So the presumption is that you're something that you're not. We make the mistake when we go into court, we try to defend our position. They have to prove theirs beyond a reasonable doubt. And one of the things that is involved in the court proceedings, you have to prove intent for any damages that's caused. And if there are damages that were caused and you intentionally caused them, then you have to pay for them. Sometimes maybe if it was just an accident, but you were involved, you may have to pay for them anyway, because that's the right thing to do. I yield.
Okay. Is there anybody with a question? Anybody else? Star 6 if you're muted.
Scotty?
Unmute. Okay. Go ahead, Scotty, New York.
Yeah, I've got a couple of things I'll rattle. The first is the last time, I don't remember if it was the last time I was in court, it's landlord-tenant that stemmed from the Article 81 guardianship that I got booted because I filed an answer. He acted, the administrator actually mentioned it's an inferior court. And that kind of surprised me. And also, what you read tonight, that you said, by any means necessary. Now, wouldn't that right there, like, show knowingly and willingly doing fraud and all kinds of other things, obviously treason? It's like pattern and practice right there written down. By any means necessary, we're going to make you a person. That isn't that what you read, Edwin?
That wasn't those exact words. Give me a minute, I'll find it.
Okay. Should I keep talking while you're doing that?
Go ahead. If you have more to say, go ahead.
Well, the other thing was, Dave, are you the same Dave that taught your document you had from 2011 that you sent me that was accepting the oath of office and accepting the Constitution? Was that the seven-page document you're talking about?
In 2011, I was in prison, so I wasn't sending out anything. There is another David Robinson that lives in Maine. He has a lot of good information. He put out three little books that you might want to buy. They only cost $5 a piece, I think, but one of them is Meet Your Straw Man, and I forget what the other two are, but they're very informational books and very, very good books. Easy to read and not expensive. Many.
So
much good information in there.
So just a point of clarification. So you were talking about the group that got the mayor. You're talking about something about the mayor. You're talking about the New York mayor, correct?
He calls me his mentor, but he is state coordinator for the state of New York for another organization that's trying to assemble and restore the republic. His people, I've given two or three classes to them on the oath of office. They took it, did it exactly like I told them to do, and they have got a lot of judges to recuse themselves. And they have put in the indictment for the mayor of New York City that made headlines all across the United States in, what, about a month or a month and a half ago.
So you're talking about the girl, the Jeannie, and Crystal, and Scott, and all them, because they also, one of them got to ask the mayor of New York a question, and his response was that the corporate council runs everything. They control the mayor before him and him, and it's not him. I don't remember what the question was. Am I talking about the same group that you mentioned?
But you have to remember, he can say whatever he wants, but he put his name down on a piece of paper that said he would do certain things. That is a legitimate offer. In my paperwork that I sent out, there's a Supreme Court case that says the oath of office is a quid pro quo contract. They agree to do certain things in exchange for us paying for their services. When they don't do what they say they're going to do, they've violated that contract. Therefore, you have a tort claim, or in their case, maybe since they violated the Constitution, whichever Constitution they swore to, they're looking at criminal charges and treason. That's the reason contracts are the law. You can't argue with a contract. If you got your name signed on a contract and you got the other person signed on a contract, the only way I know you can get out of it is if you can show that there was fraud involved.
So I still haven't cleared up if you're actually the same Dave or if it's the same group, which is New York du jour.
That's it.
Okay, after Adams answered that question and put it on the corporate council runs everything, they went after him big time, if you notice. I think he got charged. So clearly what he said was like a slip-up. He shouldn't have let that out. He was targeted after he did that. So, all right, so you are the right, you are the same person then. All right, that's what I was trying to clear up. Back to you, Edwin.
Okay. Well, I think what you were referring to there, Scotty, was 8 United States Code 1101A23, which talks about the term naturalization. It says means the conferring of nationality of a state upon a person after birth by any means whatsoever. So they're talking about the Republic de jure state here.
By any means whatsoever, yeah. All right, so I said by any means necessary. I wrote it down wrong. Well, it still sounds like that pattern in practice. of fraud.
Well, talking about conferring of nationality, the de jure state. In other words, I'm a New Yorker. I was originally a New Jerseyan.
Okay, so I also messed up saying to make you a person is nationality. Okay, so I did.
Well, they use the word person in the statute. I don't prefer to use that word because they put their own legalese meaning on it, you know, which is statutory.
Yeah, well, you can't be a person and a people.
No, no.
Not one of the people.
But you got to remember, the whole corporate system, the way it's structured, they can't communicate with men, women, people. They can only communicate with artificial persons.
Yeah. All right. Very, very. Lots of pieces of the puzzle coming together. I'll yield for a bit. Thanks. Anyway.
Yeah.
What they did is they took the definition and they changed the word into a term and then give it its own definition. The word person and man, you know, were kind of synonymous before all this corporate legalese got put into place with the terminology, the different terms that they used to apply in their statutes. And that's why when you look at any statute or code book, the first thing you need to do is open up the first pages and look in definitions.
Yep.
What does United States mean? What does state mean? And municipality? It will say, which includes, which is limiting to the words that are spoken after the word include, which includes the District of Columbia, Guam, Puerto Rico, its territories, and then cellular possessions. And the definitions of all three of those categories will be the same. But that's the only place where those statutes apply to the District of Columbia or those territories. So I yield. Is there anybody else with a question?
If I may.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
This is Dave again. The problem we got with Dave in Kansas, right. The problem we got with our legislative and statutory things, these people think they're writing new laws and there aren't any other laws on the books before that. That's the reason we got, 80 or 90 million laws out there and nobody knows what they are. If you go back to 1803, which is only about, 25 years after the Declaration of Independence, a little bit old, 28 years. In 1803, they wrote a law called the Naturalization Code. And in there, it explains how you become a United States citizen, and the words in there, and no other way. So after the Civil War, when they started talking about citizenship in the 14th Amendment, that didn't change the law that they wrote in 1803, because they commingled person and citizen. The first sentence in the 14th Amendment is fraught with fraud and lies. All persons, are you a person? Born or naturalized in the United States. You were born in the state of your birth, which was one of the states at the time, Virginia, California, Kansas. A citizen of the state in which you reside and of the United States. You know, that's all gobbledygook. It makes no sense at all if you use their terms with the words they put in it. But it was designed not for the free white people in the United States. It was designed for the slaves that were just freed. They didn't know what to do with them. But they want to abide by the 13th and the 14th Amendment, which are both fraudulent anyway. But, you know, they still want to abide by it. But again, remember, you're the sovereign. Learn to be a sovereign and act like it. I yield.
Okay.
Well, I want to add something to that, what Dave was just saying. He's right on that. But, Aaron, when he's talking about acting as a sovereign, you get to define what words mean. You don't have to use their language. You can use your own common language. So, yeah, And another example to see what we're talking about in a landmass. If you ever travel into another state, let's say from New York to New Jersey, when you go cross the line into New Jersey, it says, welcome to New Jersey. Or vice versa, if you cross into New York, it says, welcome to New York. It doesn't say, welcome to the state of New York or welcome to the state of New Jersey, etc. Or if you're going into Ohio, it says, welcome to Ohio. They're talking about the landmass there. They're not talking about that subcorporation. So every one of your states are operating as a corporation right now, which is a fictional. It exists in name only. Let's open up for more questions there, Darryl, if you had something you wanted to add.
Okay, well.
Just to add to what Ed said, to become a nation, you have to have a landmass. The de facto United States has no landmass except maybe the territories. Washington, D.C. does not belong to the de facto federal government. It's still on a loan from Virginia and Maryland. I yield.
Okay. Was there somebody else with a question?
Oh, yeah. Just one quick one. Can I cut in? Well, with Pink Floyd, welcome to the machine instead of to the state. But it's still, Dave, could you clarify what seven-page oath document you're talking about? Or can you put it in the chat or something? Because I'm still a little confused with that. So it's not the document you sent me. That was like a year ago. I yield.
Okay.
Darryl?
Okay, Kent?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kent.
I think we should clarify something, and I think Ed and Dave would agree with this, but certainly they're welcome to comment. We should stress that, and this question has come up in the past with people dealing with naturalization and status issues, somebody comes back and points out to them, well, wait a minute, I think it was the 1903 Act, Naturalization Act, and there's been some other acts after that around 1950, et cetera, overrode the other one. The fact of the matter is that the law in 1803 was never repealed. It still exists, and as Dave pointed out, it says and in no other way. So we should remember that and not be deceived by those who would tell us that, that was repealed or that's no longer in existence. We have a newer law. So we could. I'd like to hear Ed and Dave's comments on that. Thank you. I yield.
Ed or Dave?
Yeah, no, he's right. It was not repealed. No.
They lie about a lot of things. They said that House Joint Resolution 192 was repealed in 1986. It wasn't repealed. What they did is they wrote a new law that says to be enforceable in gold or silver, the contract has to be written specifically with payment in gold or silver. But they didn't do away with House Joint Resolution 192. You can write a contract, but again, that goes back to the law of contracts. The contract is the law. What it says in that contract, that is the law, unless you can prove fraud. If you can't prove fraud, you're on the hook. However, you can probably prove fraud to most of the contracts that you have signed because there was never full disclosure. Meeting of the minds. You need to understand that depending on what book you read, there's somewhere between 5 and 8 things that must be met in a contract. And years ago, there was a lady down in South Carolina. She always said on the call, you know, no contract, no case. And all you have to do to prove your case is write a letter or go to the Secretary of State of your state and ask them to do a search for your corporate name. If there's none, ask them to write out a thing that says we searched the titles of corporations and none shows up in your all caps names, and you can use 2 or 3 variations that they might use. Like Ed said, if they put just your first and last name or your first name, middle initial, last name, those are still fictitious names, same as your all caps. But once you get that thing from the Secretary of State that says you aren't a corporation, you can't contract with a corporation because the two don't mix. The Bible says, do not become unevenly yoked. And we can't contract with a corporation, not with a valid corporation anyway, but we can do it because we're the, they make us the trustee. Actually, we're the beneficiary of that straw man. And, you know, I won't go into the straw man thing, but they just, they lie about a lot of things and they BS you from the word go. That's the reason you have to know who you are and you study the maxims of law and realize that you throw up a maxim of law, they cannot hurdle that big mountain you put in front of them. It's there. It can't be debated, can't be changed or anything else. And there's thousands of them, but you can pick out the ones that you can remember and fit your circumstances. I yield.
Okay. Was there another question? Anybody? Press star 6 if you're muted. Well, you got to remember, you know, the word person and man is what they've done is they're really participating in the corruption of blood, where they're mixing the living soul with the civilly dead entity. And this is forbidden in Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, where it says no state shall enter into any treaty or alliance. And what they're also doing is they're passing bills of attainder, and ex post facto laws are implementing them. And, you know, where they're applying them out here in the states, where you had a right previously, and then they turn that right basically into some commercial crimes, and today basically all crimes are commercial. So they hold you to some statute based upon some commerce event, based upon that legal fiction. But everything they're doing is by presumption that we were all born as a national in this country. And what they've done is they've redefined and used legal ease to hold us in the capacity of a person subject to the jurisdiction. And if we don't know who we are and what our rights are, then we don't have any. But we have to know and be able to stand on it and to stand on the law, because the Constitution in this country is the supreme law of the land. And all judges and executive officers are all bound by it. So we have to hold them, hold their feet to the fire, and to break that presumption right off the bat. And don't consent. Everything is by consent. It's a voluntary system. They rely upon your consent, and they trick you into their jurisdiction a lot of times just by this word salad that they use. In the, they call it state and government secrets, and they use the style manual. And in the style manual on page 95, it talks about a lot of that, or section 95, I think it is. But anyway, this is, you know, one thing that we have to find is the importance of the words that are used, so we don't get tricked into something that we don't want to be part of or don't want to participate in. I yield.
Yeah.
Dave
was right about the contract. There's actually 8 parts to it. Most attorneys will tell you there's only like 3. And I'll just list the parts. Party to the contract. Has to be a party to the contract. Has to be free and genuine consent. Has to be full disclosure. Valuable consideration. Certainty of the terms. In other words, you have to know all the terms. You have to comprehend them. Meeting of the minds. That's number 6. And autograph versus signature. A man or woman cannot contract with a corporation, and a corporation cannot contract with a man or woman. Doesn't happen. And privy to the contract. That's your 8 points. I could go into them in deeper on another call because there's quite a bit to it. But that's just your 8 points to a lawful contract. I have a little bit of time here left, Darrell, to take a few more questions, and I'm going to have to jump off here.
Okay, that's the alliance.
I have a question.
Is bringing the public and the private together. So,
right.
Who is this?
This is Sherry in Arkansas. Hi.
Go ahead, Sherry.
It's been brought to my attention recently that anything within a box on a contract is not part of the contract. Is that true?
Absolutely.
And if so, the notary's commission is within a box. What does that do to affect a notary on a document?
All right. The style manual in the government printing office style manual says clearly that if you have a word in sentence and they box it in, it's not part of the contract. It's not part of the written judge's order. Judges do that a lot. If you ever read case law, you'll see that they box up certain sentences, certain words, or part of a certain word. That just eliminates it from the document. It doesn't exist. So if a notary's doing that, boxing their stuff off, yeah, it doesn't. It's not valid.
Well, their stamp is within a box. That's my point. When they put their stamp on there, it's within a box on, you know, four sides rectangle.
I've seen them in other states, but I haven't seen them here in New York.
Okay.
My mom's a notary. She just has a stamper and she does her signature. There's no box. She's been doing it for years for me.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ed.
Okay. Is there any other questions?
John, question.
Did I hear John from Texas?
Yeah, that's John in Texas. I got a question.
Go ahead.
Ed, do you trademark your name?
Short answer, yes. I've done it. It's called intellectual property. When you do the assumed name filing in Minnesota, that makes your all capital name your intellectual property. So, yes, it's a form of a copy of
It's a trademark. Trademark, not copyrighted.
Yes, it's a trademark, yes.
Okay, another quick question. When you do autograph, do you put the word homographic autograph instead of just autograph? Homographic, you know what that means, like homographic wheel?
No, I put the word autograph.
You don't put homographic in front of it?
Like when somebody autographs a book. Somebody wrote a book and then they autograph it.
I understand. Okay, one other thing. Dave mentioned a while ago some books that Robinson did in Maine. It was Maine. I've got the books in my hand. It's Common Law Handbook, UCC Connection, and Meet Your Straw Man. They got a fourth one is Common Law Applied by the same author. Those were the three, and then there's four.
Okay. Okay.
All
right. Okay. Scotty?
Yeah, can you just clarify a little bit more when you were talking about the middle initial? I noticed that we don't want to use the middle initial in anything we do. We do the family name and the given name with semicolons. But I noticed that they are using the middle initial and also the title. Like, for instance, with the lawyer that I tried to sue, I missed my court date, though. I thought it was Halloween. They do Warren S. Hecht. And then also they do Warren Hecht Esquire. So it's like they're putting the middle initial and they're also putting the title. So the clarification is we don't want to put our middle initial in anything we're dealing with, correct?
Yes, that's correct. When you use just an initial, that's not a proper name.
Okay, thank you so much. That's good.
There's Darryl? Also a difference with or without a period after the middle initial. And
Daryl?
Yes. Kent?
Yeah, this is Kent. Yeah, this is Kent.
Go ahead.
In the interest of continuing to network, this is kind of a ministerial or administrative issue. In the interest of continuing to network and bring people to this call, Rebecca had come on the call and asked a question. We weren't able to get a response from her. Since she was new, she may not understand how the system works, et cetera, with muting. So, therefore, we don't make that announcement at the beginning of the call anymore. Can we check and see if she was satisfied with the information we gave her, if she's still on the call? And then I would raise another point here in listening to this call, and I think this is a valuable point. We're announcing at the end that Phyllis is going to give an email address wherein you could then thereby receive notices, et cetera, if you choose to do so. So we're talking about a lot of documents, and we refer to things that are said in that announcement, sometimes not realizing that not everybody has gotten that announcement, not of their own volition, not requesting it, but they may be new to the call. So I think we're kind of doing a disservice if we don't tell people earlier in the call exactly what we're referring to and how they might get that announcement. If they then choose not to get it, well, that's on them, but at least we should make that offer to them. So I would like to know that she, who identified herself as a new caller, she actually spoke with me before this call, and I told her about the call because someone from another group referred her to me for assistance regarding her situation. So if you could find that out, I'd appreciate it in the interest of networking and bringing this call forward. Thank you.
Okay, she's Rebecca?
She's not on the call now.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, is there anybody else with a question?
Yeah, may I, Daryl?
Go ahead, Gloria. Just get away, John.
Well, regarding the box, then any notary is just not really a notary in California because mine's all boxed in. So I guess I'm not a national.
I know a lot of notaries will have you put the box around the whole notary part, but then within that box, it will identify that they witnessed you signing the document above. So, I've never encountered any challenge to that where they said, well, even though you got a notary on it, it's in a box, so it means nothing.
No, what's in the box is her commission stamp, her commission expiration date. That's the only thing in the box. Her signature.
There's two boxes. And I was told that I had, because I did it all myself, and they refused it. And I was told it has to be exactly like that. And I said, okay, I'll take it back and I'll create it like that. Because I didn't want two pages. Because they put it on a separate page. And I said, I'll put it on one page, so one page, and I'll box it just like you have it. And then she accepted it. But there's two boxes. The box where a notary public or other office completing the certificate verifies only the identity of the individual, blah, blah. That's in a box. And then around that is another box. And then under the smaller box, well, okay, there's a big box. Then there's a box that I just mentioned underneath, within that box. And then underneath it is California State, Ventura County, and then subscribe and sworn to. And then the notary autograph and the notary name and the seal goes in the box. The seal is a stamp, and it's got a box around it as well. The stamp does.
Mm-hmm.
I yield.
Yeah, I don't know. Ed, you want to touch on that a little bit? Or?
Yeah, I could touch on that a little bit. When I get documents that I'm going to have notarized, I specifically put them in the Republic. I put, for example, where it says State of New York, I don't put State of New York, I just put New York. And where it says county, I'll spell the county name in upper lowercase, but the word county I put in lowercase. I make sure the notaries sign on the left side of the document. And once they do, yeah, they do a stamp up here, but they also have an embossed seal. I always make sure they do the embossed seal as well. I don't know if they have them in California, but if they do, I recommend you have that. That, even if they got box in their endorsement for certifying that they're a notary, I don't think that would affect your document.
If I may add to that, I took out one of my mom's notarized documents that she notarized me. What she does is just a line where she puts a signature on top, and then under the line, Notary Republic in script, and then she writes the date right there because her other thing with the date, I guess, expired because she retired. But she has the State of New York Notary Public seal that's round, and there's a two circles around it with lines that are dotted. It's like a dot. They're not. So there is no box for her the way she does it now or when she used to do it before the date thing exposed. Because I've been doing this a lot of years. However, I guess those stampers maybe don't come from the state and they just get it at the print shop. So maybe some of them put it in a box. But I've noticed over the years that where she just puts a little line and actually sometimes writes in the date of its expiration by hand. So I can't show you that, but that's it. I yield.
Well, let me add this too.
Oh, go ahead, Ed.
When they were talking about the boxing, they were specifically talking about words on the document. So when that's boxed off a specific word, it's not on the document. So I don't know if that's anything of significance with the notaries out there in California. So that's the best answer I can give you at this point.
Okay, John? You had a question?
Yeah, I got a question. Texas?
Okay, go ahead, John.
Ed, there's a lady told me one time that she went to court and she won it in a jury. And because it was in a box, the judge changed that order. Instead of 12 people in the jury, even though it was a box, it was 6 and 6 is two different elevations. But she said the judge signed it because the jury was in a box. Can they do that? They did.
I've never run across that one, so I'm not sure how to answer that one.
It happened in Fort Worth, Texas. Okay, I yield. Thank you.
Okay, I think John from New Jersey.
May I?
John from New Jersey asked a question earlier, if you're still got a question.
Yeah, thank you, Daryl. Yeah, I run across in my, my documentation, whatever, where you get a response from the attorney, whatever, and they'll put things in parentheses, whatever, and that takes it out of the document. Because you're, you know, when I presented my, documentation and I put it under verified under penalty or perjury, you'll never see an attorney. They just certify that. Well, they're just certifying it's a piece of paper. They're not verifying it because a man can only verify things and they don't have firsthand knowledge either. You know, they're just printing what they're fed there, you know. Yeah, the notary, I basically just create that document myself, and I don't put anything in a box. I don't give them the opportunity to put anything in, and they just, I can't get them to put a embossed seal. They said they kind of did away with that in New Jersey, but they just rubber stamp it. But I just put a line, and I try to do what Ed was just talking about, just put the county, and I spell the county. I don't put the county of or the state of or any of that. I try to keep it in the republic, and I try to use an autograph and not a signature. Well, there's a lot of things. They tricked us with words. You know, they deceived us with words, and words mean different definitions there. So, anyway, if he could shine some light on that, I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Ed, you want to touch on
it? Yeah, if they don't have the embossed seal, I would recommend getting them to put their thumbprint on it in red ink. I know people that have done that in different areas. They got them to actually put their right thumbprint where they would put the embossed seal.
Yeah, well, I didn't try that, but that I could bring that to the table there. But I was lucky to get them to notarize. And, of course, you got to pay their, I think, $8 fee or whatever to do that, unless you're dealing with a bank. And I don't really deal with a bank there for several other reasons. You know, usually a bank has a notary in there, but either that or sometimes you got to pay them a $9 fee or something to notarize the document there. But that is a good idea to put a thumbprint on it. I don't know if I could get them, coax them to do that. I could try it, you know what I'm saying? But that'd probably make it more substantial evidence in my favor there.
Yeah. As far as them charging a fee, just go to any bank. I go to banks I don't even have accounts with, and those notaries notarize my stuff.
Really, I didn't know that. I mean, I did have an account at one time at the one bank, and I did get some things notarized back in, like, 2011 or whatever. But, yeah, where I have my private mailbox, they notarize it, but they charge it. You know, I mean, everything's, yeah, it's a corporation nation for profit.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I understand that. Yeah, I get that very, you know, when I cross into the line, it says the town of Monroe, the town of, you know, I'm just speaking around here. You'll see a sign that says of, and that always means a corporation. I was just reading them documents that I got from your other show there, and I was kind of typing and trying to put into my brief there of municipality is just an extension of the Washington, D.C. Territory, you know,
sure.
Which is very, very good there, you know. And
okay.
Yep, and I appreciate that, Ed, and I'll mute there. Thank you, Daryl.
You're welcome.
I have Daryl, a question.
I got one more time for one more question. I do have to jump off here.
I'm trying to
okay.
Ask. The notary. In New York.
Was that Sherry?
Yes, it was. And quickly, Ed, you spoke about having the notary sign on the left. What is the significance of that? And should we be signing our documents with a signature or our autograph on the left side as well?
No. You should, if, as a sovereign, sign them on the right hand side. That's
okay,
the
but the notaries. Okay.
That's the end of the document when you're autographing on the right hand side. The significance of that is they're a signator. They're just witnessing the signature, and their stuff should be on the left side of the document.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. I really appreciate it. I yield.
Well,
if I know you got to go, this is Brian, a New Yorker.
Okay, go ahead, Brian.
All right, my question is relating to notaries. In the last over 5 years, I've only come across one notary that uses an embosser or that has an embosser. They all have the seals. This is in New York. Now, I realize there's a difference in having the embosser and is not to, and that happened to be at the bank for free. Anyone that pays $8 or $10 to have, unless they're coming to you as a notary, you know, that's a little highway robbery. Because even at a UPS store, I found they may charge you $2, especially if I used to have it done for free there, but that's another matter. So my question is that going to be, I mean, we should basically do what we can if we can get it embossed as opposed to not getting embossed. I know you said you could. They could put their red foot. They could put their right thumbprint in red. I'm not sure how many would be willing to do that, but I guess you don't know it until you ask.
Well, what I usually do, they'll always, most notaries will tell you, well, we don't have that. I've even had them tell me that here in New York. And I simply tell them, this document is for international purposes only. It has to have a Boss seal. And they'll go, oh, yeah, I think I got one back here. So they do have, most notaries do have them. You just got to push it a little bit.
I understand. Okay, I yield.
Kathy in Minnesota?
Okay, go ahead, Kathy.
Yeah, about 45 minutes ago, Ed George said that you should always make sure that you correct your status first. How would I know for sure that I have corrected my status? What evidence would I have?
There's a series of documents I put together for that purpose, and you make public notice of it. Then once you've notified the public officials, you record them in your county records. And once they're done, that's it. You're out. And you'll really know it when you're put on the blue list, when you go to get your American national passport.
I sent you an email today, Ed. I hope you'll reply. Thank you. I yield.
Okay.
Well, okay.
I do have to drop off here, Daryl, because I have another call I have to do here.
Okay. Well, thanks, Ed, for coming on and sharing all your research and information. It's truly a blessing that, you know, we can have access to that information and to apply it correctly.
By the end of the week, I'll get you the script for the next call.
Okay.
Thank you all. Have a great night.
Yeah. You too.
Thank you.
Hey, Bill, I have something to say to John about getting a free notary at your county levels. Go to your county assessor, recorder's office.
Treasurer.
Somewhere in that building, they will have a notary, and it should be for free. I yield.
They're your servant. So...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and when you go into a court hearing and they ask you, the judge will ask you, do you have an attorney or do you want a court-appointed attorney or do you want to represent yourself? Say, who is self? And what they're really asking you is, do you want to participate in the fraud with us by representing yourself? Because self is another entity, and that's what they... That's one of the big tricks. I should have said earlier, but I wanted to get that out.
Notary, too.
But, Daryl, how do you respond to that?
You said if you're in court, though, you're represented by an attorney, a court-appointed attorney, if you're representing yourself.
I'm here on behalf of the matter. I'm here on behalf of the matter for the entity named, something like that. So, we're kind of went about 20 minutes over here. We should probably close out. So if there's anybody that's
comment.
New on the call, what's that?
Gloria, California has a comment.
Okay, go ahead, Gloria.
It's interesting that although the notary is all boxed in, it does say California State and Ventura County, but the state is capitalized and the county is capitalized. I yield.
Okay. Yeah. You know, when I do like an affidavit, I always do instead of state of Colorado, county of Baca. I always go Colorado State, and I usually use the small S state, and then like back at county, and that's on the de jure side. That's not on the de facto fictional side. So
yeah, well, that's how California, and that's how California does it, but it boxes it in.
Okay. Well, I know they use a lot of tricks with their style manual. So, but this is like a bar guild thing, I think, that sets up these parameters for people to follow. So, well, if there's anybody that's new on the call that does not receive the notices for the Tuesday or Thursday night calls and they would like to receive a notice, you can send Phyllis an email. She'll want your first name, state, and who invited you to the call. We do not share any contact information, but if somebody would want to reach out to you, they can send. They will be sending Phyllis an email, and she will forward that on to you, and it'll be up to you to reach out to them at your convenience. So, Phyllis, you want to give out your email?
Yes, it is blueridge1121@gmail.com. I yield.
Okay. There will not be a Thursday night call. We've been doing them on the 2nd and 4th Thursday. And on the 28th, that's Thanksgiving Day. And so we talked about not having a call that day. I announced last week that that Edward Mann with ABC Health was going to speak. But since that's on Thanksgiving, we will put that off until the second week in December. So, well, I want to thank everyone
Darryl.
For coming on the call. And
Darryl, this is Marilyn.
Okay, go ahead, Marilyn.
Remember, I get to put in an ad one more time?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, if you are over 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, the Thursday Republic call is hoping you'll join us. Our speakers share tried and tested natural and God-made ingredients that build our bodies. If you missed Edward's call last week, he's coming back. Although, I'd encourage listening to his Thursday's replay. And we are sponsoring a number of new speakers with very satisfying results. Stay tuned. It's almost ready to snow. I yield.
Okay. And you can go to abchealth.info and look at the information there. There's a lot of information there on that site. With the calcium bentonite clay, it is like a 9.4 alkaline product, and it has a strong negative charge, so it will pull out the heavy metals. If you want to go back to the call we had last Thursday, the replay, I mean, it's an excellent bunch of information, so would encourage it. The replay number is 260. So, well, with that, we'll say goodnight, all. If there's anybody that wants to close in a word of prayer, speak up or else I will. Heavenly Father, we come before you to thank you, Lord, for all the information that was shared this evening. We just pray, Lord, that you prepare our hearts and minds for this battle, that we can speak truth and that we can be clear, that we express the authority that we have, that we are under your authority, and that we have authority over those public servants that we have chosen to conduct tasks that are for the benefit of the people. And we ask you, Lord, for your wisdom. We just pray, Lord, for your protection over all those who have stood up and exposed the unfruitful works of darkness. We just pray, Lord, that you deliver us from this corruption that has been embedded throughout this country and around the world. We just pray, Lord, for those in authority, that you'll pierce their conscience to do what is right in accordance with your principles, in accordance with your will. We ask you, Lord, for strength and for healing of this nation. We just pray that you'll continue to help us to work together and to break down the walls of separation that have divided this country in so many ways. We just continue to look to you, Lord, for as you are the author of truth, and we just pray that you'll give us the courage to speak firmly and expose the wrongs that have been committed against us, and that we can once again be recognized as being one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. And we just commit all things into your hands in the name of Yeshua. Amen. So with that, if we don't see you before next Tuesday, we have a prayer call on Friday, and that is at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and everybody is invited. And that phone number is 605-313-5583 with an access code of 768-918-pound. And that is at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on Friday morning. So with that, we'll say goodnight all, and thank you everyone for coming on the call. We hope this information would be beneficial to everyone, and that it'll help us to sharpen our knowledge base, as iron sharpens iron, and when we work together, you know, it helps to build our confidence because we have it embedded in our thought process. So with that, we'll say goodnight all until we meet again.